afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic Bee Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website at www.theorganicbee.com. If you have any questions for our guests, there are many ways you can contact the show. You can post a question on our wall on Facebook, Skype us, send us a tweet on Twitter to @TheOrganicView, or you can contact me directly at June Stoyer on Twitter.
Today's topic is what you should do when your pets get sick from pet food. Imagine if all of a sudden your furry best friend and family member gets very sick from eating a bowl of kibble or a snack that you bought as a special treat. You panic, call the vet as your poor dog or cat lays down in agony, and basically you watch helplessly. And before you know it, you have a $2,000 plus bill. You're now forced to take off work, try to help this poor animal recover, while the pet food manufacturer is completely not interested in hearing about your tales of woe. As unfair and heartbreaking as that may seem, pets do get sick and often die from a pet food, a pet treat, or other pet products. And this is not related to any type of a recall. When the panic subsides, the madness really begins. For most pet owners, you wonder, are other pets getting sick? What do you do now? Who do you call? Will you even be reimbursed for the vet bills? How can you even get reimbursed for these vet bills? And the big question is, will your pet survive? There are so many millions of questions we could ask, and it all boils down to the same thing. What do you do when your pet gets sick and the manufacturer basically gives you a deaf ear? Today, I'm going to be welcoming back Sue Thixton, who's the founder of TruthAboutPetFood.com. We're going to talk about some of the steps that you need to take when you're dealing with this crisis. Now, it may not necessarily even be pet food. It could also be kitty litter or any other products. I know personally I had an experience when I adopted my cat with a cat litter. My cat was allergic to the cat litter, and it was kind of interesting because I didn't even realize that she was allergic to it, and luckily I was able to figure that out relatively quickly because I went back to basics and just analyzed her behavior for an entire day. Not everybody has the luxury of being able to do that. Sometimes you really have to go back to basics, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. At this point, I'd like to welcome Sue Thixton back to the show. Sue, good afternoon.
Hey, June. Wonderful to be here. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. Sue, can you tell our audience about who you are and why you founded TruthAboutPetFood.com?
Well, I'm a pet owner. I'm just an average pet owner, maybe a little more outspoken. It's been about 20 years ago that a pet food killed my dog. I learned, I was lucky enough to have a veterinarian that knew more than most vets do even today about commercial pet food, and he shared with me that the chemical preservative in her food probably killed her. That chemical preservative is still used today. It's called ethoxyquin. I called the company, the pet food manufacturer, asking about shelf life. My veterinarian told me that the reason this preservative is used was to extend the shelf life. The pet food company told me that the shelf life of this particular dog food, it was the leading pet food then, it is still one of the top five producers of pet food in the world. They do not use this preservative now, but at the time, this company told me the shelf life of this dog food was 25 years. And
wow.
It just...
Now, let's hold up for a second. 25 years.
Yeah.
I don't even think I have clothing that's 25 years old.
Yeah, tennis shoes. Yeah, I know. Yeah, the dog food would have lasted three times longer than my dog did. So she was 8 years old, perfectly healthy. A tumor came up on her pelvic bone, literally overnight. From one day to the next, I didn't see it. I did see it. And I had 2 weeks to tell her goodbye. And when you learn that, when a food kills your friend, it changes you. It changes you forever. It just rattles you to your core. A food that you purchased, that you put in their bowl, a company that you trusted, you believed their marketing, believed their advertising, and then you find out the truth. It changed you, and it changed me. It's what led me on this path of trying to educate pet owners, trying to prevent other pet owners from going through the same mistake that I made by trusting them and that many others have made.
This is a really horrific experience for anybody that has never gone through it. You basically have this creature that's not only something that you care for, but it's part of your family. I mean, for people that have kids and their dog is sick, I mean, it's a very big ordeal, especially to explain to children. And the thing is that, you know, when you're going through this, it's not like there's any type of a handbook or crisis hotline or any place where you can go, where you can get some type of direction or advice. It's just a horrific experience, and I've gone through that myself, and I know, you know, you and millions of other people have. What do you recommend that people do from the beginning?
You've got to, if you suspect, let's say your pet gets sick and I'm just pulling something out of the air, and this can happen, has happened, let's say it's kidney failure, okay, from a healthy animal to all of a sudden kidney failure. Most veterinarians will not immediately say, oh, it was the food, okay? It is a process of elimination. So you want to work with your vet, and you want to begin documenting everything. You've got to write down, best as you can remember, times, behaviors you might have noticed before full-blown kidney failure and you've taken them to the vet. Everything you notice. Many times I have pet owners tell me they open the bag and it smelled different. They opened the bag and it looked different. They poured it in the bowl and their dog or cat sniffed it and walked away. If we can back up a little bit, I think one of the most important things that a pet owner can do is to really know what normal behavior is for their dog or cat. You've got to know what normal is. As example, I've got two dogs. One dog is a real picky eater. He'll look at it, look at me, okay, eat a little bit, walk away, and I'll go on and eat, and he'll go back. The other dog, I could probably open a 40-pound bag of food, and she would eat every bite right there at that moment. She never misses a meal. The first dog, you know, if he misses a meal, that is normal behavior for him. Well, if the second dog misses a meal, my eager eater, if she would miss a meal or if she would walk up to the bowl and just be a little hesitant about eating, that is a sign that is something off from her that I should take note of, watch her carefully, and maybe even take her to the vet right away. Anything out of normal, you also want to watch their elimination behavior, which is always a fun job. Easier if you have a cat. You're cleaning the litter box every day. If they go have a bowel movement, as example, they urinate every day and they miss a day. You clean the litter box out at the same time every day. Yesterday at this time, there were two presents to clean out of the litter box. Today you only have one. There's something that is out of normal behavior. Our pets can't verbally speak to us, but they do speak to us in many ways if we're paying attention. And that is your first sign of what to do. So going back now to the pet food issue, you've got to think back about, oh, they did sniff that bowl of food and walk away. They didn't eat it till an hour later. Write that down. Take that to your veterinarian. Document where you bought the food, when you bought the food. If you noticed maybe a stain on the outside of the bag. If you noticed a dent in the can, didn't pay any attention to it, and bought it anyway. All of those things could have led to a food becoming contaminated.
Now, what's interesting, I just want to interject something here, Sue, in regards to canned food. People will buy canned foods not thinking anything of it. And the thing is that there's a reason why you don't want to buy dented canned foods. You also want to check to make sure that the expiration date, which is kind of comical because, as you said, the canned food will last for 25 years. But the thing is that when you're buying canned food, and I've seen people do this countless times, I think if I had a lot of time, I would probably create some type of a game where you people watch in the supermarket and watch the stupid things that people do. And one of them is, I know, I have such a vivid imagination, but hey, what can I say? When you watch people go shopping, they buy cans of food that have been dented. And they think, oh, you know, what a bargain. You know, my dog doesn't care. Oh, you know something? All the more reason why you shouldn't buy it because of the fact that it is dented. And it's interesting, the Department of Health, actually, when you're doing food handling and food safety, you always check dented cans because the can, there can be all sorts of contamination from, you know, dented or even open jars, containers, what have you. If you're buying something that is not sealed, that's also something. I mean, why would you purchase a package that was damaged in the store and basically taped shut? Who knows what that was subjected to? I mean, there was a story recently here in New York. It was a couple months ago where there was this couple. I don't know why they did this, but they would go to different supermarkets, and I can't remember what the product was, but they would purchase it, use it, and then replace whatever the package was with something old. And they did it in several different supermarkets in the same chain, and they got arrested because that's fraud. You cannot do that. That's a felony. It's also, I mean, you're putting people in danger because people, when they go to the market and they're buying something, they're expecting that it's sealed, it's intact, and it's perfectly good for consumption. When people are buying these dented cans, it's like, what are you thinking? You're not saving any money. In fact, you're going to spend a lot of money that you didn't really have to begin with going to the vet. I mean,
out
in New York, you take a cat or a dog to the vet, instant $300 just to walk through the door. It's like the bill just begins. It's kind of like, it's almost like being in a taxi cab where the meter starts running, and then before you know it, by the time you get out of the cab, it's, you know, outrageous. And the same thing with the vet bills. I know when I adopted my cat, she was an older kitten, but she was still fairly young. And she had a little bit of a cold to begin with, and that was basically the typical shelter cold, as they refer to it. And the woman that I adopted her from assured me that, oh, within a few days she'll be fine. She wasn't fine after a week, and I called her and I said, you know, is this animal really, really sick? You know, should I go to the vet? What should I do? And she gave me a couple of recommendations. I did everything that she said. But I decided, you know what, let me just take a look at what she's doing. I remember it was the morning, and I fed her, and I noticed that after she would eat, she'd go right to her litter box. And then all of a sudden, she began sneezing. And it was just lucky for me, I was able to take off in the morning, and I was observing her behavior, and lo and behold, I noticed that as soon as she came out of the litter box, she began sneezing, like, you know, just consecutive sneezes, one after the other after the other. And I came to the conclusion that it was the dust from the kitty litter. Being new to having a kitten, I hadn't had a kitten in many, many years. You know, I wasn't really too sure about the products out there, this and that. And even though there's so many wonderful products on the market, what do you use and which works best? I decided to switch the kitty litter, and that really solved the problem. It was just something that was very simple. It turned out that it was not her food, but the litter was a very big issue. And then when I started talking to other cat owners on different pet forums, they were saying, yeah, this is a very, very common problem with cats. sometimes just simple observation is really, really very important, especially when you're trying to figure out what is wrong with the animal. Because going to the vet, some people think, oh, let me go to the vet and I'll get a shot, I'll get this. Yeah, it makes the owner feel happy. But the animal is getting all sorts of drugs being injected into them that they don't really need. So that's not
necessarily the answer. Well, and it's a guessing game that you have to assist your vet anyway to figure out what the problem is. So if you, by being very alert and observant of what is going on in your pet's life, you can, if there is a medical cure that is needed, if there is medication that is needed, then you're going to find that resolve a lot quicker. And you very well could prevent a very serious illness by being watchful. And on cat litters, a clay litter, that dust you were talking about that she was allergic to, well, when if the litter is very dusty, and when you pour that litter into the box, if there is this big puff of smoke coming off of it, your cat is subjected, breathing in that dust, every time they use the litter box. They also, since cats are very clean, that dust ends up on their feet, and they ingest it. A clay litter can cause kidney problems long-term because they're ingesting that clay, and it can block up their kidneys.
Well, the interesting thing, Sue, is that the kitty litter that I was using, it was clumpable litter, and the dust actually, the smell of the litter, it was perfumed. And, you know, when you're a new pet owner, you don't always think about different, you know, I thought about the food, and that wasn't a problem, but the pet litter was just something that, as a new pet owner, I really didn't think, you know, I didn't really give it too much thought. I just kind of figured pet litter is pet litter. And so it was a very, very big learning curve. What was interesting was that I actually had a reaction to the pet litter. The dust, when she would kick up the litter, I would begin sneezing. And you know, it was just kind of interesting. She had a reaction that I didn't even pay attention to because I didn't know to look for it. So I guess the message, folks, is when you adopt an animal and you introduce that animal into your home, observe their behavior. Take a look at their reaction to different things. It may also be something like the collar that you might choose. I was told very sternly to get a breakaway collar. The breakaway collar that I bought in the pet store, my cat had an allergic reaction. And it wasn't that she didn't like the collar. The collar itself, I guess whatever the collar was made from, really, really irritated her skin. So I wound up taking that off. And it's just kind of interesting how you don't think about these things, whether it's pet litter or the collars, but there's so many different things that your pets could be having a reaction to, and unless you really observe them, that's the only way that you're going to know. You know, as
that's
you said,
right.
They do not speak. So,
yeah,
you know.
That's right. Well, and you do these things anyway. You are watchful over them. It's just that because the way the world is now, the way that the pet food industry, the pet product industry is, that there are those that are conscientious and with integrity, and there are those that are profit-minded. Then, and it's, you know, by looking at them, you can't tell who is who. Surface look, you can't tell. So we have to be very observant of our pet's behavior because the pet is going to tell us. They are going to tell us many different things, what's right, what's wrong, if we listen to them.
Now, say if it's something like the pet litter or the collar or even the toys. People don't realize that, okay, if you buy a pet toy, whether it's a hemp dog puller or whatever the case may be, my dog's never had any problems with the hemp rope pulls, but I know the synthetic ones, I've been pretty lucky. My dog never had problems with any of the treats. Actually, she was kind of interesting. She would take whatever I would give her, and she'd bury it. So I don't know. I always had this big fear that, especially with all the big cow bones that I bought, that, I mean, she buried everything. one of these days somebody was going to move in and decide that they were going to extend the house and the property, and you know, find all these cowbones.
Yeah, no,
thinking, okay,
in the backyard.
Yeah, where are these coming from? But you know, have dog must have bones. So you know,
yeah.
But let me ask you a question in regards to pet shampoo. I always used Vermont Soap's pet shampoo on my dog, and my dog never had any problems. But I know that they have other pet shampoos. You know, years ago, I remember using a pet shampoo. The dog basically went nuts. The only thing that we knew to do was just rinse it off and just run cold water on the dog just so that they weren't completely freaking out. I mean, that's pretty painful.
Well, my understanding of this, and I don't know as much about the shampoos as I do pet food, as example,
mm-hmm.
But there are, and again, my understanding is that the same can hold true with human shampoos. Regulations with shampoos are not nearly what they are for food. And many shampoos, pet shampoos, can contain bacteria that if there is a cut or scratch on the skin, the bacteria in that shampoo can make that pet very ill. It would then be absorbed through the skin, and that pet's going to get very ill.
So what do you mean by bacteria in the shampoo? I don't understand.
Oh, well, it doesn't have to be, you know, let's say that if it's a water-based product, the water doesn't have to be a purified water. All the ingredients in that shampoo, you know, they are not food. They are not consumed. So they do not have to meet the same requirements that a food has to. So a shampoo could be used from a water that perhaps is contaminated in one way, shape, or form. And then it's on the skin. Then it gets absorbed, and there can be the problem.
Interesting. It's just amazing. Well, you know, with the shampoo, I've always used an organic shampoo. It's a learning curve. You don't really think about all the different products and whatnot, and as you learn, and you learn from other people, because, I mean, when you're taking care of an animal that you have some familiarity with and you're going through the whole thing all over again, it's like being a new parent. I mean, we have
right.
parenting classes for new parents, but we don't have, you know, puppy parenting or kitty parenting classes or bird parenting classes for new bird owners.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, I didn't really know much about birds. I figured, had them when I was a kid, so no, can't be that hard as an adult. And I didn't realize that, you know, there's all sorts of things that you need to pay attention to, not to mention the fact that birds do bite.
Yes, I mean, they do. I have two
kind
of them myself. So
it's kind of obvious that they bite, but when you're thinking that you're going to adopt this bird and it's going to be cuddly just like your kitty cat, you know, that's a big learning curve. Also, if you're playing around with your dog and, you know, how your cat might scratch you or just gently nibble on your hand, it's a little different when your dog nips at your hand and it's like, hey now, you know, that's pretty painful. But in any event, getting back to the basics for pet owners, when you discover the problem, one of the other things that I found was extremely effective when you're buying a new food. Once again, I encourage all pet owners to make their own food, but there are a lot of people that just don't have the time or the know-how. And I know, Sue, you're going to be publishing your book next year.
Yeah, we're going to take care of that know-how part.
And that's going to be out next year. But until then, if you do buy pet food, what I tell people is save your receipt.
Yeah.
And that's a very...
And save the packaging, even with a can. Let's say the worst happens. And I do want to talk canned food thing to the dented cans. But... If if your pet gets sick from what you believe is pet food related, regardless whether your vet believes it or not, if you believe it, your first step would be, of course, to go to the veterinarian, but you want to report this to the FDA. The FDA, without the packaging, will not investigate it. You have to have the packaging. So
now, why
even
do you have
with
to have
canned
the packaging? Can you just explain why that's a necessary step to take?
I can't explain why the FDA thinks it's necessary, but they do. They have to have all of the packaging information before they will investigate it.
Well, I think I might have the answer to that. It's basically because of the fact that you can't just go around saying that, you know, XYZ brand of dog food made my dog sick and my dog died. You have to have proof of the purchase. You have to have proof of the actual product. And what they normally do is request that you send the remaining part of that bag back to them so that they can actually send it to a laboratory to be tested. And,
well, they might. They might test it, yes. You can also, first for pet owners, you want to get on the FDA website, fda.gov, and you can type in a search of how to report a pet food illness or, you know, whatever search term you want to use. The FDA has an online, you can report everything online, fill out, it takes about 20 minutes to go through the whole form, but you can do it all online. And it's a food safety reporting portal is the name of it. And you do want to report whether you know for sure, whether your veterinarian is backing you up or not. You definitely want to report this to the FDA.
Well, why wouldn't your veterinarian back you?
Well, because there a lot of different reasons. I can only speculate, but one is that it's very difficult to get ironclad evidence that it is food related. I think many veterinarians don't want to get tied into a legal situation, so they don't want to make the statement, yes, it's the pet food. There are many things that can make, dogs especially, but cats too, a lot of times they'll eat anything. Anything laying around on the counter, they are on the floor, cats on the counter, dogs on the floor, they will eat. And that can make them sick as well. So it's very difficult to know. But in other instances, as example, there were a litter of puppies, 8 puppies, and from a new bag of food, and this is a true story, actually did happen, new bag of food, within 2 days of opening this new bag of puppy food, these were like 7-week-old puppies, 7 of the 8 were horribly sick. It ended up that 7 of the 8 died.
Wow.
The bodies were autopsied. The veterinarian could not believe it was the food. No, it's got to be parvo. They did test for parvo. It wasn't parvo. Well, it's got to be this. They did test for that. No, it wasn't. Every single thing was negative, because the vet did not want to take that stance. This situation escalated to University of Oklahoma Veterinary School, and the veterinarian then there did autopsies on all the bodies, found kidney or liver damage, terrible kidney or liver damage, I don't remember which. The veterinarian was given permission to share all of the documentation with myself and with Lisa McCormick of Consumer Affairs, but the veterinarian would not talk. To my knowledge, the protecting a giant pet food corporation.
So the vet was basically afraid that he or she would be sued had they given testimony.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
And, I understand where they're coming from, but if the food made the pet sick and the vet has clinical evidence, I thought at this point, okay, now we have it. Now, in this particular pet food company, has many, many consumeraffairs.com has where pet owners can log in and fill out complaints of a pet getting sick, and they keep track of all of this. Well, this particular pet food company has hundreds, and supposedly the FDA is investigating them, but they've done nothing, and this has gone on for years. And here we finally had the bodies to study, the tissue to look at, and the pet food. I thought we had all the variables here, and then the vet would not speak. So oftentimes the vet can't or won't do anything. But pet owners still have more power than they realize. You get the documentation. You get on the Consumer Affairs website and find similar complaints with the same type of food, print all of those out, you write everything down, the treatment of your pet, every possible scenario you can document it, get a statement from your vet of what the symptoms were, what the treatment was, if there was a treatment, and then you take the pet food company to small claims court. You might have...
Let's talk about this. Taking the vet, did you say, or the company to...
No, the pet food company or pet food
the company to small claims court. Okay, so let's begin the process. So you've collected your documentation. Also, since most everybody has either a cell phone or a camera within their reach, it's very important to take not only pictures but video if you can.
Yeah. Yes. Detailed pictures, detailed video. If you can video the pet when it's sick, if you can get pictures of the food, what it looked like. A lot of times bags are opened and you can visually see there is a problem with the food. There again, it's hard to believe, so you go on and feed it anyway. Anything you can document, pictures, video, in writing, yes, do it. And get all your test results. Then file for your day in court. People don't believe they can win this, but there is a story of a 72-year-old man, dog owner, I believe he was from Texas, and he used one of the spot-on flea treatments on his dog. And within 36 hours, 35 hours, his dog died.
Wow.
With his vet bills trying to save his dog, was about $4,500. Now, laws everywhere will only give you replacement cost for your pet. They consider the pet of no more of a value than your couch. There is no emotional monies that will be given, you know, like in a human, if found guilty. So it is just for your hard costs. But this 72-year-old man with no legal counsel and no legal experience went up against Hart's Mountain. That's the spot-on flea treatment he used, was a Hart's product. And there were several attorneys against him representing Hart's in this small claims court. And this man won.
They actually showed up for this.
They have to. They have to defend their company name.
Yeah, but the thing is that it's small claims court. I mean, the amount of money that they're going to spend on an attorney. See, this is kind of the ironic thing, because as litigious a society as we are, usually when it comes to a very large corporation being taken to small claims court, they usually would rather pay it because of the fact that the wages that they're going to be paying their high-end attorneys per hour are just simply not worth it.
Well, but when you sign off, this is the decision that the pet owner must make, and this is the decision that this man from Texas made. It very well could have been that Hartz offered to pay him the $4,500, his expenses and replacement cost for his dog, but in return, they accepted no responsibility, and he was not willing to accept that.
Then they expunge the records so that there's nothing, and I'm sure that the greedy lawyers make sure that he cannot file any future claims or make any public statements, so on and so forth. That's a very, very big deal. So most likely this gentleman said, you know, something, it's not about the money. Because let me tell you something. Oh, yeah, and let me tell you something, folks. Once it's on record, that becomes public domain. So any time that a company is sued, that's something that your attorney can actually use against them. And depending upon how many complaints, it's like with the Better Business Bureau. Some people have had really great luck with Better Business Bureau, others have not. But it's interesting with some companies, when you speak to a representative and you say, how many outstanding issues do they have? Now, I want to ask you this. What about contacting the Attorney General if you live here in the United States?
Well, good luck with that.
Really?
You
how
can. Well, because it's pets. They are bogged down with cases, and pets are the last on everybody's list. They're the last. Pet food is the last on the FDA's list. Pets are the last on everybody's list. So that again, is why going to small claims court is your best recourse. Now, many times the company will try, just as you pointed out, will say, okay, well, we're not going to accept any responsibility, but we will pay for your vet bills. The pet owner then at that point has to make the decision what they want. Do they want the responsibility, or do they just want, you know, the money and move on? And it is a difficult decision, especially if an animal died. That is very gut-wrenching to bring all of this up again. But taking them to small claims court is the most powerful thing that pet owners have to truly change the future of safety of all pet products, because we are holding them accountable. And with the right documented evidence, and you can use the internet, get in forums, contact other pet owners who have been through had the same pets get ill, from the same product, so forth, get all their data and march into small claims court. Imagine if this just happened once a week in every major city in the United States. Just once a week. There's 76 million pets in the United States. Granted, there are probably thousands of pets every week getting sick from some type of a pet food treat or other pet product. Now imagine just one a week in every major city, one pet owner take them to small claims court. These companies will have to represent themselves. It's going to cost them a lot of money. Even if they lose, it's still going to cost them a lot of money to defend themselves, to be represented. They will have to clean up their act to save themselves money in going to small claims court. I think it's such a powerful way for the average pet owner who gets dusted under the rug. Nobody has time. A lot of people think that their pet dies, well, I'll get an attorney and I'll sue them. Well, you're not going to find an attorney that will take on these corporate giants. You just won't find it. Plus, there's nothing to sue for. You can't sue for emotional damages. You can only sue for your hard costs. So,
well, what's interesting is that people seem to think, oh, I'm just going to get an attorney and sue. And you're absolutely correct. Trying to find an attorney that will take it. I'm sure that people can find attorneys out there. You know, you're going to pay by the hour and through the nose. Period.
If it cost $1 million.
Oh, of course.
It could cost one case to compile the evidence, go up against one of these huge corporate entities, and what law firm has that? And all they can sue for is your vet bills, even if your vet bills were $10,000. You know, it until animals are not a piece of property, you know, until they're of more value in the legal system than a chair or a sofa, small claims court is about the only recourse that pet owners have.
One thing that I just want to point out is if you have had some type of issue, it's very important to get the word out there. It's very, and not to just gossip or spread rumors, this and that, where, you know, I had a bad experience with blah, blah, blah. But if it's documented, then it's validated. And what I mean by that is a formal complaint, to the Attorney General in your state, a formal complaint to the Better Business Bureau. A formal complaint to wherever you can really complain is very effective, because the more complaints that there are, the more that we can really push to change the industry so that when there is a complaint lodged, the company can take proper responsibility and proper action. Now, one of the things that I want to just point out is the use of social media. For those of you that are very tech savvy and understand social media, it's very interesting if you find, for example, on Facebook, there are all sorts of different groups, but even on Twitter and other social media sites, there are so many organizations where people have gone through the very same issues that you may have gone through. So that's an option that you might want to look out, especially...
And consumeraffairs.com, too. They you can file a complaint about any product, but if you go to consumeraffairs.com and type in any pet food name, you can find how many and if there were reports of other pets getting sick from this food. And it does need to be documented. You're right. Also, pet owners need to call their State Department of Agriculture. Each state, their Department of Agriculture, they have a pet food representative, and file a complaint with your State Department of Agriculture as well, the FDA, State Department of Agriculture, and then get online.
Now, what's interesting is that... I mean, we're getting so many different comments here on Twitter, and I just got a comment from Serendipity Jane, and she wrote, "My cat got a skin problem after I fed him Sheba, and then I stopped it, and it went away. It just shows that they add stuff which is not healthy." Now, you know, that's a great point, because if... it doesn't matter if it's a big, gigantic bag of dog food or if you bought a case of canned cat food. You know, if they take a bite of it and they get sick, why are you going to force them to eat it? I mean,
people just amaze me.
It
really is. Well, I think pet owners have been brainwashed for so many years in how to feed our dogs and not ask questions, and that all of these commercial foods are healthy and safe. Now, there are many out there that are healthy and safe, but there are many that are not in my book. Hmm. And we see these commercials, and I think for starters, it's the mentality, is, and I was the same way, is, this couldn't be. This food could not have made my pet sick. This is a reputable company. Well, just because you know them and they have TV commercials on and they're in magazines doesn't mean they are responsible and have integrity. It doesn't necessarily mean that. You have to look further. You have to read the ingredients. And if your pet, their normal behavior is to eat that food as soon as you set the plate down and they don't, listen to that. Pick the food up. They're telling you something. Their senses are a lot keener than ours. They smell something. Pet foods also can get contaminated in warehousing. The manufacturer might do everything right. They might use the highest quality of ingredients. They monitor every step of the manufacturing process. But when the product leaves their warehouse and goes into mass distribution, these huge warehouses might be filthy. There was 2.5 years ago, one of the big chain, Petco, PetSmart, I don't remember which one. I think it was Petco, but I don't remember for sure. There was a 15-state distribution center for this big pet store chain that was shut down by federal marshals and the FDA because of filthy, filthy conditions. It was overrun with rats. There were bird feces, rodent feces, all over the products. And they literally came in and shut down the entire 15-state distribution center. So just because the manufacturer might have done all the right things, throughout the distribution process, the food can get contaminated too.
Now, can you talk about some of the ways that pet food can be contaminated? I mean, especially the dry dog food. Let's just talk about that for a moment.
At any step in manufacturing, one of the biggest things that can go wrong is the within the ingredients themselves, okay? If each ingredient is not tested of every batch, if each ingredient is not tested prior to manufacturing, let's say they use a grain, corn, which is a very common ingredient. Corn is very prone to a deadly mold called aflatoxin, and this is lethal. If every single batch of corn or corn ingredient, corn gluten, whatever, is not tested for aflatoxin, and then the testing, say you've got a ton of corn, these are huge batches of food that are made. They will pull out a section of corn from one area of this ton. This area might be clean. The bad part might be that down at the very bottom or over on the left side of this ton of corn is filthy with these molds. And that gets processed into the pet food. Then the mold is in the food, and it can kill pets. It did in 2005. Vitamin and mineral mixes that are added to the food. Many, many companies use a vitamin, and it's a premix. A certain level of all the different vitamins and minerals are dumped into the big pot, and it's all stirred up and then formed, extruded, or baked into kibbles. Well, if one element of those vitamins or minerals is off, if there's too much of one thing, if there's not enough of another, that can be lethal. It can be very toxic. So, you know, a great deal of things. If perhaps one in a pet food manufacturing plant a couple years ago, someone lost their hard hat. And as it's grinding up all the ingredients, now why they didn't stop this at the time, I don't know. Who would not realize that their hard hat fell off their head? I don't know. But they didn't stop the manufacturing. And it ended up that the food had to be recalled because people were finding pieces of plastic in their pet food. So you name it, and it can go wrong all through manufacturing. And then you've got the next step of warehousing and the distribution channels. If they're using pesticides in the warehouse to control insects and rodents, well, those are lethal chemicals, and they can leach onto a product. The absolute impossible, which everyone said it was totally impossible, did happen with the Tylenol recall a year or so ago. Tylenol got
There was another Tylenol recall?
Well, during that Tylenol recall.
Oh.
That happened.
Saying, I remember that Tylenol recall. I was a little kid back then.
Well, that, oh, no, this was about a year ago.
Another one,
huge...
you would have thought, that actually is a very interesting subject, and unfortunately we're almost out of time. For those of you that are not familiar with it, Tylenol had this complete horrific public relations situation going on in which someone had contaminated a bottle of Tylenol, and people, this was actually what really pushed the requirements for package safety,
right,
and
yeah,
for seals, because somebody died, and the lawsuit that was waged, I mean, I'm sure the greedy lawyers got quite a lot of money from it, but it was, you know, basically something that was heard around the world. It was just unbelievable. And I'm just really surprised that Tylenol would have a second situation
recall, this contamination happened from a chemical in the wood pallets that the packaging material was stacked on. A chemical in the wood pallet leached into the packaging, leached into the product.
It leached
the
into
absolute,
plastic bottling?
Yes, ma'am.
Unbelievable.
The absolute impossible scenario they said could never happen, it
but
did.
It did. Well,
and,
you know something, it's interesting because I've had the president of the Glass Packaging Institute on a couple months back, and I remember we were talking about packaging, how plastic does leach out, but things can also leach in.
That's right. Yeah.
So what
yeah.
was it that what was it that leached into the bottles?
It was some type of a chemical that is used for the wood pallets that they treat the wood pallets with. I don't recall what the name of the chemical was, but it took them forever to figure it out. I don't think it killed anyone. It did make a few people sick, but there was an odor, and it was a huge, huge recall of many different type of Tylenol products, and it was all sourced back to a chemical in the wood pallet. So same thing can hold true with pet food, especially kibble pet food. And so many things can go wrong in the canning process. The canning process is that is a real art. The can has to be filled an exact amount, has to be sealed properly. If it is dented, don't buy it. Don't buy it, human or pet food. If the can is dented, don't go there. If your bag of pet food is torn, if it is a stain on it anywhere, don't buy it. If you open it up and it smells different, take it back. Listen to that little voice in your head and take it back. If you pour it into the bowl and your dog or cat doesn't want it, take it back. Listen to them. You can save their life by doing that.
Oh, of course. And I would think that from a manufacturing perspective that they would want to know if something that they're putting out there is, causing some type of pain or agony or even death for an animal. I mean,
well,
that reputation...
some do and some don't. Some will listen to you. There's reports everywhere of, you open up a bag and it's full of bugs. And they call the manufacturer, and one manufacturer said, well, we didn't do it. It happened in warehousing. Once it leaves our factory, it's out of our control. And they took no responsibility whatsoever.
Oh,
now,
I had that happen with cat litter. I bought this non-GMO cat litter, and it was a box, a gigantic box, and it had pantry moths in it. And I was mortified because once you get pantry moths in your house, good luck getting rid of them.
Don't
letting roaches into the house.
It wasn't a corn litter, was it?
No.
Don't use a corn litter.
No, it was okay. Actually a wheat litter, and I contacted the manufacturer, and they were just like, you know, sorry, we have no control over what happens.
Yeah.
It could have happened in the warehouse, and I was really pissed off about it. I thought to myself, you know, something, I'm trying to do the responsible thing, buy something that is non-GMO, that's compostable, the whole kit and caboodle, and the manufacturer was... really didn't, or the representative, should I say, really did not, it, you know, just basically took a nonchalant attitude. And, you know, now now I think that would have a different result, especially with the show and everything. But, you know, it happens. But and I've seen that in the pet stores where you look at the different cat litters that are made from grain, and you could see the pantry moths sometimes. I mean, if you look carefully enough and it's during the warm weather, you could see them. And that's a very, very big issue to me because I don't want them. It took me a very long time to get rid of them, but now I'm at a point where, you know, I don't want to take any chances. But in order to prevent that, folks, you could just shove the litter. It's kind of a bit of a job, but you have to shove the litter in your freezer. And once you freeze it for a substantial amount of time, how long would you say, Sue, if you freeze the litter?
Oh, I'd say at least like 48 hours.
Yeah,
you know,
should,
2 days.
Yeah, that should kill them off. You
yeah.
Know?
Yeah. But finding room in your freezer is another chore.
Yeah. Sue, do you have any last advice to any of our listeners out there that you want to just leave them with?
Well, listen to the little voice. If it doesn't look right, if it doesn't smell right, listen to your voice, listen to your pets. If the worst happens, report it to the FDA, report it to the State Department of Agriculture, report it to the pet food company or pet treat company. If you are not satisfied, be brave. Be brave. Do what? If a 72-year-old man can take on hearts and win, and with no legal experience and no lawyer at his side, and he went up against corporate attorneys and won, then everyone else can do that too. And I think our pets need to be advocated for, and be brave and do it.
Thank you, Sue. And how can our audience get in touch with you?
My website is truthaboutpetfood.com. There's a free newsletter. Keeps everybody updated on all the latest information. Sign up for that. And if they need to contact me directly, they can through the website. Or email me, susan@truthaboutpetfood.com.
Thank you so much for tuning in. This has been June Stoyer with the Organic View Radio Show. Have a great afternoon, everyone.